Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tearing into a topic that is absolutely foundational to success, yet, well, it consistently gets pushed to the side. Implementation.
The follow-through.
Exactly. Think about it. You and I, we've both had those brilliant ideas, right? Maybe it's a game-changing project at work or, you know, a personal habit that will finally unlock peak performance.
Or even just rearranging the living room.
Exactly. But how often do those brilliant sparks actually turn into, like, concrete, lasting reality?
Not often enough, that's for sure.
For so many of us, the gap between a great idea and its successful execution, it just feels like this chasm.
It really does.
The source material we're looking at today not only spotlights this challenge, but gives us this, well, incredibly practical toolkit to bridge it.
Yep.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Sounds good.
Our guide for this deep dive is an article from smartpubtools.com titled Implementing Change in Pubs, a Practical Guide.
Right.
Now, I know what you might be thinking. Pints and pub lunches. How does this apply to me? But what makes this particular article such a fascinating and honestly universally relevant deep dive is how it distills these complex change management principles into such relatable, almost common sense tactics.
Drawn straight from that environment.
Yeah. Straight from the bustling, unpredictable environment of a pub. Our mission today is to extract these incredibly practical pub-tested strategies for turning any idea, big or small, into a successful reality. We want you to walk away with a clear roadmap for making change stick.
And that's precisely what caught my eye. The core premise of this source is, well, it's really insightful. It argues that most pub changes don't fail because the idea itself was bad.
Right, not the idea.
They fail in the implementation. And it's striking how often we see a brilliant concept. Maybe a new craft beer selection, a revamped menu, even a loyalty program.
Yeah, all good ideas on paper.
Exactly. But they completely devolve into chaos.
Yeah.
Unhappy staff, frustrated customers. Not because the vision was flawed, but because the operational details just weren't thought through. So understanding these pub-tested tactics, it offers a remarkably practical shortcut to being well-informed about effective change management, whether you're managing a busy bar or, you know, a global project team.
It's almost counterintuitive, isn't it? We pour so much energy into the initial spark, the grand vision, that aha moment.
We love the shiny new idea.
We do. But this article suggests we're consistently misplacing our focus. We often equate brilliance with the idea, but this article reveals a more uncomfortable truth. That moment is maybe, what, 1% of the journey?
If that.
The real genius, the key insight here, is how we consistently underestimate the sheer operational gravity of making it happen, even when we intellectually know implementation is key. What do you think are some of the biggest sort of psychological hurdles that stop us moving from the what to really focusing on the how?
That's a great question. And I think the article implicitly addresses it by showing how easily that initial enthusiasm can blind us to the practicalities.
Right, the excitement takes over.
Yeah, we get caught up in the excitement of the new without really considering the disruption it creates, the training required, or, crucially, the inevitable resistance.
It's like planning a massive banquet without checking if you have enough ovens or staff or even plates.
Exactly that. And what's fascinating here is how the source immediately moves from this foundational truth to a highly structured, almost battle-tested approach for overcoming those very human tendencies. This isn't just a pub problem. It's a universal challenge in any organization or even personal endeavor where you're trying to shift from an old way to a new one.
So if we're serious about making an idea stick, where does the article suggest we even begin? It seems, they argue, it all starts with setting our sights correctly. They frame it as defining success with SMART objectives.
SMART goals.
Now, many of our listeners will know the SMART acronym, but what common mistakes does the article highlight? You know, people think they're using SMART goals, but they still miss the mark. How do these pub examples clarify that?
That's a crucial point. You see, many people might get the specific part right, maybe, but they stumble on achievable or time-bound.
Ah, okay.
They'll set a goal like improve service, which is vague, or maybe eliminate all wastage tomorrow, which is just unrealistic.
Well, right. Impossible.
The article points out the power in shifting to something really concrete, like cut cellar wastage by 20% within 8 weeks.
Okay, much clearer.
Or for service, instead of improve service, it's reduce order to table time by 3 minutes in the next month. It's not just specific. It's realistically ambitious. It's measurable with numbers. It's relevant to the pub's profitability. And it gives you a clear deadline to actually measure against.
Yeah.
It forces you to think beyond just the wish to the how and the when.
That distinction between improve service and reduce order to table time by 3 minutes, that's so powerful. It immediately shifts from just aspiration to measurable action.
Exactly.
But okay, once you have those laser-focused SMART goals, you need to know who's actually doing the work, or maybe more importantly, who's ultimately on the hook for it, right?
Absolutely. Accountability.
That's where the article introduces a really crucial framework for team clarity, the RACI model. Because as the source points out, when everyone's responsible, it often means...
No one is. Yeah, ooh, it's classic.
It really is.
The RACI model is brilliant for cutting through that ambiguity, especially in a fast-paced environment like a pub or really any project team where lines of authority can get a bit blurry.
So how does it break down? Let's use their example, the new menu rollout.
Okay, yeah. So for responsible, these are the doers. Mm-hmm. In this case, the head chef and the sous chef are responsible for testing the recipes, actually cooking them.
Got it. The hands-on people.
Exactly. Then accountable. This is the single person who owns the outcome. The buck stops with them. For the new menu, it's the landlord. They might not be cooking, but they're accountable for its overall success or failure.
Okay, one owner.
One owner. Then you have consulted. These are the people whose input you need before making decisions. So bar staff might have insights on customer preferences. Maybe even a few trusted regulars could offer valuable feedback.
Right, get their input.
Get their input. And finally, informed. These are the people who just need to be kept updated. They don't actively provide input or do the work, but they need to know what's happening. Think delivery drivers or maybe part-time staff who need to know the new menu exists but weren't involved in designing it.
Mm-hmm.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, I mean, imagine how much smoother our own projects would be if we had this level of crystal clear role definition right from the start.
Oh, so much smoother. No more drop balls, no more people doing the same tasks.
Exactly. Avoid so much confusion.
And okay, once those roles are clear, the next crucial piece of the puzzle isn't just, you know, sending out a quick email. It's about strategic communication.
Yes.
The article flags this as mastering communication, emphasizing that it absolutely makes or breaks changes. Without it, staff feel blindsided, customers feel ignored, and that's just a recipe for disaster in any business.
It absolutely is. Mm-hmm. And the source provides a fantastic blueprint for a multifaceted communication plan.
Mm-hmm.
It's easily adaptable, really.
How so?
Well, for staff, they recommend things like pre-shift briefings, maybe quick updates on a WhatsApp group, things that fit their busy schedules, giving immediate relevant info.
Okay, targeted.
Very. For regulars, it's about engaging them directly.
Mm.
Posters, maybe Facebook events, table talkers, ways to build anticipation and keep your loyal customers in the loop and excited.
Build that buzz.
Yeah. For the landlord or brewery, the higher ups, it's more formal. Regular email updates, monthly check-ins, that provides crucial oversight and keeps key stakeholders informed.
Right.
And if needed, for the council or authorities, compliance notifications are obviously essential for any regulatory stuff. What truly stands out to me is this targeted approach. Different audiences get the right info, in the right way, at the right time. It's not one size fits all.
That segmentation of audience is incredibly smart. It's not just about sending a message, but sending the right message to the right people.
Precisely.
And often, resistance to change, especially from staff, isn't really about them being difficult, is it? It often stems from a fear of failure, maybe, or just a lack of understanding.
That's a key point.
Which brings us to the next step. Empowering staff through training and preparation. This is where you proactively address and hopefully remove that fear.
Yes, and the source offers incredibly practical and, I'd say, empathetic tips here. They recommend running short, focused training sessions on new systems, maybe during quieter periods. Maximize learning, minimize disruption.
Makes sense.
And a key element I found really insightful is using role-playing for customer communication. For instance, practicing. Okay, what do we say when someone asks why their favorite ale's off the menu?
Oh, that's good. Prepare them for those tricky questions.
Exactly. It builds confidence, prepares them for real-world interactions. And providing things like cheat sheets, you know, simple one-pagers behind the bar, empower staff with quick info when they need it most.
Like a safety net.
Yeah. And here's where it gets really interesting. This approach shows, I think, a profound emotional intelligence. It's directly addressing staff anxieties and equipping them to succeed rather than just expecting them to figure it out under pressure.
That shifts the whole paradigm, doesn't it? Empowered staff are genuinely engaged staff.
Absolutely.
And speaking of minimizing disruption, the next step, the article highlights, the power of piloting and testing is all about avoiding a full-scale catastrophe by not going all in at once.
Okay, avoid the big bang.
The big bang approach, as the source calls it. That can lead to disaster if you haven't ironed out all the kinks first.
This step is just crucial for risk mitigation and iterative improvement. Learning as you go. The source provides excellent, really actionable prub examples of how to pilot and test.
Like what?
Okay, so instead of launching a massive new Sunday roast menu across all hours, maybe you trial it for just 2 weeks with only 20 covers per service. See how that goes.
Small scale first.
Exactly. Mm. Or if you're rolling out a new Rota app, don't force everyone onto it immediately. Trial it with just 2 staff members first. Get their feedback.
Learn from a small group.
And for, say, a new supplier, don't switch your entire cellar over at once. Trial the new supplier with just 1 beer line initially.
Makes total sense.
It minimizes risk, allows for refinement based on real-world feedback, and builds confidence before you commit fully. It's about learning small, failing fast if you have to, and then scaling wisely.
That incremental approach just feels so much more manageable, less overwhelming too.
Definitely.
But even with the best planning and piloting, some resistance is, well, it's natural, isn't it? It's to be expected.
It is. Change is disruptive.
That's why the article next emphasizes proactively managing resistance. The source wisely states that you should anticipate it and actually plan for it rather than just reacting when it inevitably pops up.
Indeed. And the source outlines a clear playbook for managing resistance, and it's really rooted in empathy and support.
What does that look like?
First, listen. Really listen. Allow staff to voice concerns early. Create a safe space for that. Don't just shut them down.
Okay. Hear them out.
Then empathize. Acknowledge the disruption change brings. It's okay to say, look, I understand this might feel challenging or different right now. Validate their feelings.
Show you that.
Next, support. Offer extra training, maybe additional resources, or even some one-on-one help to help people adapt, given the tools they need.
Practical help.
And finally, reward. Recognize and maybe even celebrate those who embrace the change. That reinforces positive behavior and encourages others through example.
Lead by example.
Exactly. And this raises an important question for all of us, really. When we implement change, are we truly creating that safe space for concerns to be heard? Or are we just kind of pushing through, hoping for compliance?
That's a critical self-reflection point for anyone leading change. Definitely. Okay, so once you're navigating past those initial hurdles, you don't want to lose steam, right?
Momentum is key.
That naturally leads us to the next step. Fueling momentum with quick wins. Nothing kills enthusiasm faster than waiting months and months for any sign of results. You need to identify and celebrate those small successes along the way.
Absolutely. The psychological impact of quick wins is incredibly powerful. It acts as validation, as motivation. It proves the effort is worth it.
So what are some examples from the pub context?
The source gives great, really concrete ones, like announce the team briefing, hey, everyone, we saved 50 pounds in wastage this week. That's tangible, immediate proof that the new process is working.
Nice. Simple but effective.
Or offer a free pint to the first staff member who logs their Rota swaps correctly using the new app, a fun, instant reward that encourages the new behavior.
A little incentive.
Yeah. Or post a Facebook update. Wow. First 50 Sunday roasts. L sold out. This generates excitement both externally with customers and internally with the team, showing the public's positive reception.
Builds energy.
These small victories, they reinforce the positive behavior, keep the energy high, and prove that the change is actually worthwhile.
It's all about showing that the effort is paying off and building those positive associations with the new way of doing things.
Exactly.
And okay, once you've successfully navigated all those steps, the final crucial stage is sustaining change. Review, refine, and embed. This is where you lock in those successful changes so they don't just fade away after a few weeks. They become the new established norm.
This is often called the refreeze stage in change management models, and it's absolutely essential for long-term success. If you skip this, things often drift back.
So how do you embed it effectively?
The source details several practical methods. You need to update your standard operating procedures, your SOPs, so the new way becomes officially documented.
Make it official.
It should be added to the induction training for new staff. That ensures everyone starts on the same page with the updated processes from day one.
Build it into onboarding.
Building simple checklists can help sustain the new practices day to day. Just reinforces the habits.
Keep it top of mind.
And of course, continuing to celebrate success stories related to the change, reinforces its value over time. Keep talking about why it worked.
Right.
The pub example here is perfect. After successful stock control changes are implemented, you build seller checks into every single shift checklist. It becomes routine.
Just part of the job.
So what does this all mean? It means change isn't really a one-off event. It's more like a continuous cycle of improvement. And embedding is how you make those improvements permanent, preventing that drift back to the old, maybe less effective habits.
That makes so much sense. It's not just launch and forget. It's launch, refine, embed, a whole ecosystem for change.
Exactly.
And to really bring these 8 steps to life, the source provides some fantastic real-world case studies. They show both stellar success and pretty stark failure.
Yeah, these case studies are incredibly illustrative. They show the direct consequences of either applying or neglecting these principles.
Call us about them.
Okay, take the Red Lion success story. They successfully trialed a new menu with regulars first. They actively consulted staff throughout, and they made sure to celebrate their first quick wins. The result?
What happened?
They increased their Sunday covers by a remarkable 40%. That's a textbook example of several steps, piloting, communication, quick wins, all working together synergistically to create tangible growth.
Wow, 40%, that's significant.
Huge. Then we have the White Swan, another success. They introduced a new Rota app, but they did it gradually. They made sure staff were well-trained, and they rewarded the early adopters who got on board quickly.
And the outcome.
Rota disputes plummeted. They were down by 70%. A clear win that came directly from patient piloting and thorough training. Less hassle for everyone.
Huge improvement in efficiency and morale, I bet.
Definitely. But then, there's Queen's Arms. This one's the cautionary tale.
Oh, dear.
What went wrong?
They rolled out a brand new point-of-sale system, like overnight, with practically zero training for the staff.
Oh, no. I can see where this is going.
The outcome was entirely predictable. Complete chaos on the opening weekend, orders messed up, customers furious, and staff turnover. It rose significantly shortly after.
A stark warning, then.
A very stark warning of what happens when critical implementation steps are completely skipped. It proves that even the best idea, the best technology, is basically useless without proper execution and thinking about the people involved.
Those examples truly solidify the lessons from the 8 steps, don't they? Shows what works and what absolutely doesn't in a very tangible way.
Makes it real.
And for those listening who are thinking, okay, this makes sense, how do I actually do this? The source even mentions a practical implementation toolkit. Yes, the toolkit is a fantastic, actionable takeaway. It includes practical tools like a SMART goal sheet to help you define those objectives with real precision. There's a RACI template for clear role assignment. A comms plan template to structure your communication effectively.
And your resources.
Yeah, they even suggest things like a resistance checklist and quick win celebration ideas. These aren't just theoretical frameworks. They're direct, practical tools you could probably download or adapt and use today to start making your own changes stick.
That's great. So this deep dive, it really makes it crystal clear. The difference between chaos and lasting success isn't usually the brilliance of the idea itself.
Not usually, no.
But the meticulous step-by-step commitment to implementation. As the source powerfully concludes, by setting those SMART goals, assigning clear roles with RACI, strategically communicating, empowering staff with training, piloting changes first, managing resistance proactively, celebrating quick wins, and finally embedding improvements. That's how you truly make change stick.
That's the formula they lay out.
And the benefits, as they highlight, are profound.
Right.
Your pub, or let's be honest, any project you're working on runs smoother, your staff are happier and more productive, and your regulars, or your key stakeholders, they stay loyal.
It pays off across the board. And building on that immensely practical advice, maybe consider this as you go about your week. Look at a change you're facing right now. It doesn't have to be in a pub. Maybe it's a new habit you want to start, a small team project, even a bigger organizational shift.
Okay.
What's the absolute smallest pilot you could run for that change? Or what's the very first SMART objective you could define just to get started? The power, as this article profoundly reminds us, isn't just in the idea you have.
Right.
It's in the action you take, step by step, to bring it to life.
That's a fantastic challenge and a perfect note to end on. Thank you for diving deep with us today.
My pleasure.
We encourage you, listening, to observe how these lessons on meticulous implementation impact outcomes in your own lives and work. Until next time, keep those brilliant ideas flowing, and maybe even more importantly, keep making them happen.